This is your WWE Hell in a Cell review 2020 here for October 25th. I am the Solemn Monster, and thank you for choosing me for your Hell in a Cell coverage tonight. The kickoff show. The pre-show match was R-Truth defending his 24/7 title. I know you're all very excited about this. I think this may have been the first time they've actually announced the 24/7 title match in advance. Usually it's just some random skit, some random segment on the show. They actually, a few hours before, they announced it. Like it was a big deal. Like it was going to entice people to actually buy the pay-per-view or order the network. However it is that people watch the show these days. Are there still people who watch this on pay-per-view? Please tell me that's not the case. Please tell me that we still don't have people paying $50 for this show. At least with the AEW shows. I mean, I'm not thrilled about it because I'm so used to paying $10 and getting it on the network. But at least it's four times a year. Are there people paying $50 a month? 12 times a year for these WWE shows? I hope not. I don't think this match enticed a single person to watch this show here tonight. It was the usual comedy. R-Truth used some, and I like R-Truth. That's the thing. I mean, I like R-Truth, but I'm over the whole 24/7 thing. R-Truth used some of his old idol, John Cena. He looks up to John Cena. He idolizes this man. He was using some of the John Cena spots here in this match. Drew Gulak was his opponent. Gulak went for a roll-up, and Truth countered into a jackknife pin for the win. When the match was over, we had the Ninja Warrior himself. Akira Tozawa came out. Lince Dorado came out. Gran Metalik, he came out. They ran out to chase after the 24/7 title. And you know what? It sucks for Lince, and it sucks for Gran Metalik. I mean, look, what would they be doing anyway, I guess? It's not as if they were in some prime position, but they did have some real estate on SmackDown for a few months. This angle that was unfolding, right? Tension in the ranks of the Lucha House Party with them and Kalisto, and then they just put them on different brands. And I mean, they're probably not going to do anything with Kalisto either. But yeah, Gran Metalik was wrestling for the Intercontinental title just a few months ago on Fox, and here he is now. Apparently, this is going to be his whole purpose on the show now, is to chase after the 24/7 title. Traded to Raw just to chase after the 24/7 title. I can't think of a worse fate. Mustafa Ali was backstage with Retribution. Can't even say that name with a straight face, but I'll try. I'll try to keep a straight face. Mustafa Ali challenged MVP to put up any member of the Hurt Business one-on-one against any member of Retribution on the pay-per-view in a singles match. The challenge was issued. The pay-per-view opened. It opened hot with a Universal title on the line. Hell in a Cell, I Quit match. Jey Uso challenging the Tribal Chief himself, Roman Reigns. They opened the show with this. I don't think anybody predicted they would open the show with this. Roman Reigns came into tonight undefeated in Hell in a Cell matches, even though he went to a no contest a couple of years ago with Braun Strowman. Didn't look like much of a winner that night. But he has yet to be beaten in a Hell in a Cell match. And I can tell you that coming out of the show tonight, well, you can probably figure out whether or not that undefeated streak is still intact. He came to the ring with a gold-colored glove on his, I think his right hand. He had a gold glove on his right hand looking like Thanos. Looked pretty cool. And Roman Reigns almost immediately, within the first like minute and a half, hits a spear to Jey Uso. This entire match, if you want to know how this match played out on the show, this match played out much the same way the match at Clash of Champions played out. It was a good match, but it wasn't even so much about the match. It wasn't even so much about the action and the moves. This entire feud, this entire story has been built on storytelling. And if you are not into the story that they're telling, then you didn't like this match, and you didn't like the match of Clash of Champions. But if you are into the story, if you are into all of the family drama that's been playing out on TV, if you're like me, then you probably thought this was excellent. This was another masterclass in pro wrestling storytelling here tonight. Roman hits the spear, but there's no pins, right? I quit match, no pins. No submissions. You have to say, I quit. Roman tells him, in a few minutes, you're going to wish that you never came here. We had a lot of Roman Reigns trash talking, some from Jey Uso as well. One of the benefits of being in this empty arena setting is the fact that you can pick up, they can mic these guys in a way where you can actually hear what they're saying. They can talk smack and you pick up on every word. You wouldn't be able to do that in a building with 10,000 people or 15,000 people. So it works for the Roman Reigns matches that he's been having. It absolutely works. Hits a second spear. Tells Jey Uso, I will end you. I'm going to end you. Third spear attempt. Jey kicks him, though, super kick. Goes up top, comes off with a Samoan splash. Jey hits a second splash. Referee is asking Roman if he wants to quit. I mean, come on. I mean, is this guy new? Can you imagine Roman Reigns quitting after a superfly splash off the top rope? This referee was the most annoying goddamn guy this entire match. And I understand he's just doing his job. This entire match. Jey, do you give up? Roman, Jey, do you give up? Jey, do you give up? I'm like, shut up already. Somebody gagged this guy. I was begging Roman Reigns to knock this referee out. When he threw him out of the ring towards the end of the match, I popped. Sick of this guy. Roman Reigns says the head of the table never quits. So, of course, Roman Reigns was not going to give up. This guy is a fool. He's a fool for even asking. So Uso pulled a leather strap out from underneath the ring, and he tells Roman Reigns, I'm going to whip the dog shit out of you. And he begins to whip Roman Reigns three times. He whips him with the strap. In the middle of all this, Roman, though, he busts out a third spear. So he hits Jey Uso with a third spear, and Jey starts shouting that he can't breathe, right, because he's taken three of these now, so he's saying that he can't breathe. And now Roman has the strap. He's going to make Uso pay. He goes, I do the whipping around here. And Roman ends up tying his wrist to one end. He ties Jey's wrist to the other end. And so all of a sudden, we witnessed history tonight. I said this on Twitter during the match. We witnessed history tonight here on the show, because not only did we get the first ever I Quit match inside Hell in a Cell, we got the first ever I Quit leather strap match inside Hell in a Cell. You talk about shoving as many stipulations as you can into one match. I mean, this was a Russo special here on this show. I Quit, leather strap, Hell in a Cell match, no DQ, right? You may as well throw that in there. It was no DQ. Every stipulation that you could think of. So, actually, somebody on Twitter did mention this. Who is it? Trippin' Balls, yes. Shout out to Trippin' Balls on Twitter. He follows me. But he said that it reminded him of the Loser Leaves Town Coal Miner's Glove Steel Cage Tuxedo match from Mid-South Wrestling. I think that was Ted DiBiase and Jim Duggan, if I'm not mistaken. I will say that still takes the cake. That's a mouthful. That still takes the cake. But they were getting close. With the stipulations here on this show, they were getting close. So Jey made a comeback. He wraps the strap around Roman's throat, which is something we haven't seen on WWE. Well, I guess we haven't seen it since WrestleMania. When Randy Orton tried to choke out Edge, and there was a whole big controversy about that. It's not often that you see people getting choked. Remember, you used to see, like, the cameraman's, like, the camera cord wrapped around people's throats. You don't see that anymore. Ever since He Who Shall Not Be Named. We just don't see that kind of thing anymore, so I thought that was kind of interesting. Now, Reigns was selling this like he was unconscious, and I actually thought this was great, because at one point it looked like he was totally out, and the referee was about to call for the bell. And so for a brief moment there, even though I didn't believe for a second that Roman was going to lose this championship, for a split second there, they had me thinking that they might have a ref stoppage here in this match. But then Roman, all of a sudden, he came alive, he woke up, and started moving. Superman punch. And then Roman locks on the guillotine. Same move he used to beat Braun Strowman on TV a couple of weeks ago. Jey goes out, Roman lets go, and the referee wants to know, do you quit? Keep saying it over and over again. Do you quit? Jey, do you quit? But he's out of it. He's not saying anything. The referee tells Roman he won't say it. He's got to say the words, I quit. Says, Jey won't say it. He won't say the words. And we've got the referee is still asking him. He's not answering. So Roman grabs the ring steps. He grabs hold of the ring steps. And he slides them over by Jey's head. Okay, so Jey Uso's head is on the apron. Puts the ring steps right next to his head. He had already hit one drive-by. He wouldn't give up. So he does another drive-by into the steps. Steps into the head. Head into the ring post. And now Jey Uso, of course, he wasn't saying anything before, so he's not going to say anything now either. Referee's asking him, do you quit? Do you quit? He wouldn't shut up. This brought out Adam Pearce, Pat Buck, Jamie Noble, a whole host of referees. I thought this is where the match was going to end. They're trying to stop Roman. It's as if the match is over. I thought the referee had already stopped it. Apparently not. Roman brought the ring steps into the ring. He tossed them in. He couldn't quite get them in the first time. But he got them in the second time. So he's got the steps over Jey. He's basically holding him down. And now Roman is just talking all kinds of smack to him. And he picks up the steps. He's ready to bash this guy's brains in. And who should run down? Because remember, the door was open when all the officials came in. So the door to the cell is open. And who should come running into the ring to shield his brother and to protect his brother? But Jimmy Uso. So Jimmy Uso runs down, and this is where things got real, because he's using Jey Uso's shoot name. He's saying to Roman, what's wrong with you? This is Josh. I'm like, who the fuck is Josh? I looked it up. Sure enough, Jey Uso, his real name is Josh. So he's like, this is Josh. What are you doing, man? And Roman puts the steps down. Roman sits down in the middle of the ring, and Roman Reigns begins to cry. Roman Reigns begins to sob like a baby. He gets the red eyes. Actual salty discharge is coming out of his eye sockets. This man is putting on an Academy Award winning performance. Here in this match, either that or he bit his tongue. I've done that before. I know that sucks. But he's got the waterworks going. Maybe he's got hay fever. You know, he's getting an allergic reaction. Who knows? It seems like Roman is having second thoughts, and Roman says, man, I'm sorry. What? It's like he's like talking to himself. What's gotten into me? And so he you know, he's basically like shaking hands with Jimmy. Jimmy's like, it's going to be okay, Us. It's going to be okay. But all he was doing was lulling him into a false sense of security. Roman locks the guillotine on Jimmy, and they had this great shot. They had this great shot of Jimmy Uso locked in this guillotine. And he's holding on to his brother's hand. So his brother and Jimmy, their hands are locked. Jimmy's still out of it, or Jey is still out of it. But it was just this great camera shot. We don't get too many of those in WWE anymore because the production is awful on these shows. But I thought that was a great shot. And slowly but surely, Jimmy is going out. Jey is kind of coming out of it. And in order to try to get Roman to let go of his brother, Jey does the one thing he said he would not do. He quits. Jey Uso says, I quit. He does so to save his brother. I'm telling you, man, give that man an Oscar. Got the red eyes and everything. And as soon as the match was over, as soon as Roman got what he wanted, it all went away. And it was just right back to being Roman Reigns. So I thought he was fantastic here. He got what he wanted, right? He's the tribal chief. He got what he wanted. And they have a shot of the stage. And who is on stage as Roman is approaching to greet them? The Wild Samoans. We got a Wild Samoans reunion. We had Roman's father, Sika, and Afa, who lost a lot of weight. Well, I mean, he lost a lot of weight years ago. But I don't know. How old is Afa? Afa's got to be up there. But there they were, reunited on TV, the Wild Samoans, Afa and Sika. And they put one of these Samoan leis on Roman. And Roman stands there, the tribal chief, celebrating with the Universal Championship. This is the best storytelling that WWE has done in years and years. Cannot say enough good things about this story. Honestly, the stuff with Roman and Jey Uso has been some of the best WWE television all year. And I know this hasn't been the best year of WWE programming, so the bar is not that high. But best storyline, best segments on any of their TV shows, I think, all year, have come out of this storyline, have come out of this program. They went 30 minutes. Did the match drag in the middle? Yes, it did. There were a few minutes there where even I was like, all right, they should probably end this. It was dragging a little bit, but it all served a purpose in the end. It finished strong. It all served a purpose. There was no ref stoppage. There was no bullshit, like really bullshit finish here. It worked. It made sense. It played into the story. Roman Reigns got Jey Uso to quit, and I loved it. And it really does seem, I got to tell you, with everything, they're really going in hard on this whole family angle. It really does seem like they're hoping that they get a match with The Rock at WrestleMania, that they can get The Rock to sign on for a match at WrestleMania with Roman Reigns, so that could be their big marquee match. It's like it all comes down to Rock's schedule. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think it's all going to fall apart if they're banking on that. If they can get some kind of guarantee that Rock is going to be there, that's the biggest possible match you could do with Roman Reigns. It is the biggest match that you could possibly do, bigger than Goldberg, bigger than Brock Lesnar, would be Roman Reigns against The Rock. And the great part about it is it's not just bringing in the old guy because you want to, pop a big number. It fits the story perfectly. Because when you think of that Samoan family, what is the biggest name that you think of? It's The Rock. And now you've got Roman Reigns going around talking about, I'm the head of the table. I'm the chief. It's me, me, me. And the story just sells itself. But it really all boils down to The Rock's schedule. I'd love to see it. I just don't know how practical it's going to be. Saki Tumble says, Afa is 77. Okay, well, 77 years old. And someone said, Rock is pushing 50. Look, Rock was younger than he, by a number of years. Rock was a lot younger in 2012 when he came back and wrestled John Cena. And even then, I mean, he got hurt. The first match with Cena in Miami, I think he tore his hamstring. The second match at WrestleMania when he dropped the belt to Cena, The Rock just fell apart. I mean, the injuries coming out of that second match were ridiculous, and it delayed the filming of, I think, was it The Game Plan or whatever movie it was that he was filming. I don't think it was The Game Plan. It was something else, maybe Hercules. But in that second match, he tore his adductor muscle. He tore this muscle. He tore that. And so you're right. Rock now is 8, going on 9 years older than he was then. I'm not saying it's a great idea, but I'm saying if you can construct a match that is as safe can be, it would still be the biggest match that you could do for Roman Reigns or WrestleMania. Jeff Hardy and Elias had the misfortune of having to follow all this because this was a great open to this pay-per-view. I mean, you couldn't open this pay-per-view in a better way. And then these two guys have to come out here and follow that. So Elias came out, he was singing a song about... All I remember is he was singing a song about Jeff Hardy and DUI. They can't help themselves. This company cannot help themselves. They cannot get off this fact. Yes, we know. We know Jeff Hardy has a problem. And we know this. Jeff Hardy is an addict. But they can't let go. They have to incorporate it into every storyline that he's in. So he's singing about Jeff Hardy and DUI. And I got to tell you, if this is a preview of the new album that he's got coming out tomorrow, I think I'll pass. Elias has a new album dropping tomorrow. It's called Universal Truth. Universal being one of the many titles that Elias will never hold. This entire feud is based off of Elias's foolish belief. Elias may be the only man on the planet who believes that Jeff Hardy was the one who hit him with his car 5 months ago. There isn't anybody else on the planet, or even in their little universe, I think, who actually believes that Jeff Hardy was behind the wheel. Except Elias, because the guy is a fucking moron. And that is the whole premise of this feud. He blames Jeff Hardy for hitting him with his car. So they have this match. It isn't much of a match. It went a few minutes. Elias avoided a twist of fate. He had Hardy up in the position for an electric chair. Spun him around. A little clunky, but he spun him around and gave him a powerbomb for a near fall. Jeff came back, hit the whisper in the wind, and hit the twist of fate. So now Jeff is going up top for the Swanton Bomb. Elias rolls out under the bottom rope. He's on the apron. And Jeff now climbs to the top of the post and is teasing that he's going to do a Swanton Bomb on the apron. He's going to pull like a Darby Allin here. I mean, I guess he's pulling a Jeff Hardy, but I'm so used to seeing Darby Allin take stupid bumps like that now. And Jeff Hardy's a lot older than Darby Allin, so thankfully, he did not do it. Elias rolled out to the floor. Jeff jumped down. Thank God. As he's walking over to Elias, though, Elias had grabbed the guitar, and he was going to use it. Jeff cut him off. He took the guitar, and he smashed it over Elias's back for the disqualification. So that was a lame finish, and unfortunately, it means that this feud is going to continue on. It is going to continue on for yet another match. I don't care about any of this. I suppose it's a fine little undercard feud, but I just can't get over the stupidity, you know, of what this is based on. Elias is an idiot. He is the only person who believes that Jeff Hardy was the one behind the wheel, and he is now on the same brand with the man who was behind the wheel, most likely. Sheamus was traded from SmackDown to Raw, but because Elias has to be a heel, he has to play dumb. I just think this whole thing is stupid. We got to talk about Otis. Otis, who won the Money in the Bank briefcase back in, I guess it was May, right? They had the Money in the Bank pay-per-view back in May. It seems like WWE has not had a clue what to do. Ever since they put the briefcase on him, it's like, oh, shit. Well, we don't have an exit strategy here. We don't have a way out of this. How can we get this briefcase away from this guy? And it sure would be nice when they put the briefcase on somebody like they did with Asuka. Although those were unique circumstances this year. She was basically made the champion the next night. But it would be nice to know that they actually have some kind of thought in mind for where they might go and not just put it on someone who really was treated as an undercard comedy character. I don't think that's how the Money in the Bank concept should be treated. I think it undermines the Money in the Bank concept. But Otis has had the briefcase now for a number of months, and all these Law and Otis skits that played out on TV on Friday night, which I thought were entertaining, but it all leads to The Miz challenging Otis for the briefcase. Otis has new theme music that I actually think suits him better than his old music, and I don't say that very often about some of these new songs. I think a lot of the new songs that we've heard are very generic. They're just not that good. And don't get me started on Keith Lee. Thankfully, Keith Lee was in studio laying down vocals for some new music that he'll be getting soon. But I actually thought Otis's new theme suits him very well. At one point during this match, there wasn't much to the match, but at one point during the match, Miz caught Otis with a standing boot to the face. And The Miz is not known for his hard-hitting offense. The Miz is not known for working stiff or being overly intimidating when it comes to his offense in the ring. He got him with this boot in the face, and it looked great. He caught him flush right in the face and knocked this guy down on his ass. And again, I don't say that very often about The Miz's offense, but I will give him props for that boot. I did think that was a cool move. So The Miz went for the it kicks, the S kicks, call them whatever you want. And that only fired up Otis. He hulked up. He made a comeback. And he went for the caterpillar. John Morrison was out there. He dragged Miz outside the ring. Morrison tried to, a minute later, he tried to strike Otis behind the referee's back with the briefcase. So he took the Money in the Bank. He got up on the apron. Otis was in the corner. And Morrison is coming in, and he's going to strike him with the briefcase. And at the last second, the referee, Jessica Carr, she turns around. And she spots Morrison and says, "What are you doing?" And Morrison says, "Oh, well, you know, oh, I was just handing it to him. I was just giving it to him." And she throws Morrison out. So he puts the briefcase down. John Morrison leaves. Otis catches Miz with a discus clothesline. And he got a very close near fall out of that. And then came the big shocking moment. Here in this match, this was the big shocking moment, which was Otis goes to hit the ropes. And as he is approaching the ropes, Tucker picks up the Money in the Bank briefcase and he waylays his partner, his brother, his best friend. He waffles Otis with the briefcase. And Otis goes down. The Miz is in shock. The Miz can't believe what he just saw. He covers Otis to win the briefcase, and for the first time in a decade, The Miz is once again the Money in the Bank contract holder for the second time in his career. The first time The Miz cashed in Money in the Bank was 10 years ago, right around this time. It's actually about a month from now. But it was a decade ago. And it was against Randy Orton. He cashed in and won the WWE Championship. Not only did he cash in against Randy Orton, it was in Orlando. The same city they were in tonight. How eerie is that? So it made you think at this point in the show, not knowing how the main event was going to play out, might history repeat itself? And obviously that could still happen. It is still a possibility. That could still happen. So I love how Tucker turns on Otis, and they're on separate brands. Tucker is on Raw. Otis is on SmackDown. By the way, I didn't mention this on the podcast earlier today. And if you did not listen to the podcast, by the way, the full podcast, Solid Monster Sounds Off, go up every Sunday on all the major podcast platforms. So, you know, hint, hint, go check it out. We covered a lot of ground this week. But one thing I did not mention is that Tucker was giving an interview. And he was asked, when did you find out about this split? Like, they were going to split you guys up. Did they give you a heads up? Did they tell you a week in advance, a few days in advance? Not only did they not give him a heads up, and they usually don't. Like, a lot of people just don't know what's going to happen until the day of or right, you know, a couple days before. This poor bastard, they have all the rounds of the draft, right? And then they had Raw Talk. And the guests on Raw Talk were, was it Raw Talk or Talking Smack? I think it was Raw Talk. Heavy Machinery. They found out live on the Raw Talk show that they were being broken up. When the news was broken to all of us live on TV, that's when Otis and Tucker found out that they were being split. And clearly, you can hear him talking about it. It broke his heart. I mean, clearly, he wasn't very happy about that. I just think, man, that fucking sucks. Can you not at least give these people a heads up? I guess maybe they're going for their real reaction, but you know, these are guys that are used to working together and traveling on the road together, and it's less of an issue now because all of these shows are in Orlando. They're not really traveling anywhere. They might start soon, you know, possibly traveling to other cities, but, you know, I mean, they did that shit with Jim Ross years ago when Jim Ross found out he was being drafted to SmackDown. They got a nice close-up shot of his face, didn't tell him anything beforehand. Actually, they did. They said that the announcers were safe. And then they moved him to another show anyway. That's when he lost his gig on Monday Night Raw. Some of the people who work for this company are just pieces of fucking garbage. I mean, the way they treat these people is just ridiculous. But yes, now they're on separate brands. And he cut a promo, did Tucker backstage. I thought he cut a pretty good promo. This was Tucker's first promo since turning on his tag team partner. He says, "We were supposed to be a team. I was the workhorse. And for what? So I could always be an afterthought. Otis can't function without me. Who gave him the confidence to ask Mandy Rose out? He said, I did. That was me. Who's always been there for him? Me. Otis at this point comes charging towards him in the back. They start brawling. Officials come and break them up. Now, we have Survivor Series coming up. That is the next pay-per-view next month. Typically, the theme for Survivor Series has been Raw versus SmackDown. Now, the theme for Survivor Series this year is going to be the 30-year anniversary of The Undertaker. We saw that with a commercial they aired on this pay-per-view tonight. I assume they're going to maintain the Raw versus SmackDown concept, so if they do, that could be their way of doing this match. I guess they could have the match there. I still think this is a mistake. I think it was very premature to break these guys up at a time when they desperately need tag teams. Not makeshift teams, real tag teams. They don't have that many of them, at least not on the main roster. And to split these guys up, you know, they still hadn't won the tag team titles. They did the same thing with Cass and Enzo. Big Cass and Enzo Amore, they broke them up too soon. I don't know what it is. This company, it's like they have trouble keeping teams together for long enough to actually kind of get everything out of them that they can. And then break them up. They just can't help themselves because they really don't prioritize tag team wrestling. They haven't for a very long time. And I don't know what their future... I don't know that their futures are all that bright on their own. Tucker may get a shot, but does anybody actually think that Tucker is going to end up in some kind of prime position on his own? I don't. So I think that this is going to be looked at. I think people are already looking at it as a mistake, but I think we're going to look back on it and realize that this was a big mistake. And then we got the best match on the entire show. Sasha Banks challenging Bayley for the SmackDown Women's Championship, the match that should have closed out this show tonight. Now that the show is over and we see what they did in the main event, I can safely say that this match should have closed out the show. Today marked 380 days for Bayley as the SmackDown Women's Champion. And as we look back on her reign as champion, I have to, you know, give her all the props in the world, because it's a role that she grew into. I never thought they would keep the belt on her this long. What happened is when the pandemic hit and we had all of these empty arena shows, I mean, really, before anybody was allowed, even friends and family, or we had the Thunderdome crowd, it was just the Performance Center. Bayley was one of the performers who shined on those pandemic shows, because she was coming out and she was going off on Michael Cole and being all sarcastic, and she would berate him every week. And just making comments in general, kind of like what Roman Reigns is doing now, where we can hear her, and she was able to show more of her personality, and she got more comfortable as a heel. And I thought that she was very entertaining. She just kind of grew into the role, and I thought that she had a tremendous run as the SmackDown Women's Champion. So I think you got to look back and really give her a lot of credit, because she turned what I didn't think was going to be a very eventful run and turned it into one that's going to be remembered, I think, for a very long time. So these women were going after each other, I mean, right out of the gate. They took advantage of this stipulation. These were two women who have, they're best friends, but they've worked together before. We know they have great chemistry. This is a match that has been in the works for a very long time, and I think they've been waiting for this match. They knew the position that they were in, and they were going to take full advantage of all the toys and all the smoke and mirrors and the weapons and everything. There was a running meteora outside to Bayley. This was one of the highlights of the match. She had Bayley propped up against the cell outside with a table. So the table was kind of sloped. And Sasha backs up and she gets a running start, and she basically almost uses the table as a ramp. And runs up the table and hits like a flying meteora. It's one of the coolest meteoras I've ever seen her use. There was another one off the top rope that got her a near fall. So Bayley took over a few minutes later, has Sasha outside the ring, and she catapults Sasha throat first into a pair of kendo sticks that were laid across. They were wedged between the holes in the cell and the little tiny holes in the ring steps. And remember, Sasha had the neck injury, so they were playing off the storyline neck injury by doing that. There was a running sunset powerbomb by Bayley that sent Sasha headfirst, the back of her head, right into a steel chair that was wedged in between the ropes. These women were bringing it. I mean, I was worried for both of them, but I'm always worried about Sasha Banks because she's so tiny, and she just goes out there. I mean, I still have memories when she did that dive through the ropes in that match on Raw with Asuka. And I think her feet got caught like in the middle rope when she went to dive out, and she just did like a header. And I thought she broke her neck. And I could think of probably like half a dozen different spots like that with Sasha. She gives it her all, but I think she does so, kind of at her own expense sometimes. But these women were bringing it here in this match. A lot of cool spots here. There was a backstabber by Sasha into the bank statement. Bayley escapes, catches Sasha up in the ring skirt. So Bayley gets out of the bank statement, scurries out of the ring, and Sasha is kind of going after her, but she gets Sasha caught up in the ring skirt. So she's caught up in the ring skirt. She can't go anywhere. She's ramming Sasha face first into the steel ring beams underneath the ring skirt, underneath the ring. She rams her face first. And now Sasha is just hanging. She's like dangling on the side of the ring. Bayley grabs a kendo stick. She starts whacking her across the back with it. Bayley grabs more kendo sticks. Now this, I don't know what the hell this was about. She grabs more kendo sticks and she grabs duct tape. and she begins to build some sort of contraption. I don't know if she thought for a second that she was cast in the new Home Alone movie. I don't know what she was trying to do. I don't know that she knows what she was trying to do. Michael Cole was making fun of her on commentary. Like, I don't know what she just did. I don't know what she built. It was like the sticks were like intersecting and it was taped in the middle. It looked like something that like a little kid, like, you know, Macaulay Culkin would set up in Home Alone that the bad guys would trip over. It never came into play, I don't think. I don't think it was ever touched after that. I think she kind of just gave up. So as good as Bayley is in the ring as a wrestler, I don't think she has much of a career as an engineer or an architect. So she wasted so much time building this pointless contraption that when she goes to grab Sasha, Sasha blinds her with the fire extinguisher, sprays her right in the face. Sasha grabs another kendo stick, beats on Bayley with it, goes for a frog splash. Bayley pulled a chair on top of herself. So Sasha landed on the chair. Now both women are down. Bayley sets up two chairs in the ring, opposite one another, and she sets a ladder up across the chairs. She lays Sasha on the ladder, and she spray paints something, NWO, whatever it was. That'd be kind of funny if she did. Spray paints something across Sasha and climbs up to the middle rope with a chair. She's going to come off with the chair and land on Sasha. Sasha rolls off the ladder. Bayley misses. Sasha hits another Meteora. She used the ladder that was set up across the chair. She kind of stepped off the ladder, hit another Meteora. And I thought the table one was cooler. And then she hits a belly to Bayley on the ladder. So she just kind of flings Bayley. Bayley goes splat on the ladder. Got a near fall out of that. And Bayley came back, hit a belly to Bayley of her own for a near fall. And then came the finish. Very clever finish here. She picked up the chair, and she hit Sasha with it. And she went to go perform that headlock driver finish. I forgot the name of it, but the headlock driver to Sasha on the chair. Sasha is able to avoid it, and she ends up driving Bayley into the chair. She wraps the chair around Bayley's head, and she locks her in the bank statement. So she's got her in the bank statement. The chair is around Bayley's neck. And as she's wrenching back, Sasha with her feet is stomping on the chair. That's a callback to their match in Brooklyn. When Bayley had the bad hand, the broken hand, and she was reaching for the ropes, and Sasha was stomping on the hand. It's a great spot. Never actually connected with the hand if you go back and watch it, but it looked great. It's this great visual on... I was in the building that night, so I couldn't see it up close, but... that was a callback, I think, to that match. She's stomping on the chair. She's trying to break this woman's neck. And Bayley has no choice but to tap out. And with that, Sasha Banks wins her very first SmackDown Women's Championship. An excellent match to add to the list of excellent matches that these two have had already in the past. And the best women's match that I think we've ever had inside Hell in a Cell. Now, there haven't been that many of them. There have been maybe, I don't know, what, three maybe? Maybe there have been three other women's Hell in a Cell matches. I think all of them may have actually had Sasha Banks in them. I mean, she had the match with Charlotte, the one with Becky, and that might have been it. Unless I'm missing one, I think that might have actually been it. The one that she had with Becky last year, I thought was excellent. That was actually the only redeeming thing on that pay-per-view last year. Everybody talks about the horrendous finish. People forget that show opened with an excellent match inside the cell between Becky and Sasha. And she now adds this one to her resume. The match with Sasha and Bayley in Brooklyn is still better. I mean, that's still the best match they ever had. That hasn't changed. But this was excellent. And they, I thought, made great use of the cell. One thing that I never need to see again, and this really hit me in this match, are the use of kendo sticks in WWE. WWE, for whatever reason, it feels like this year, and not just the Dominic Mysterio and Rollins and Murphy stuff, although that, I mean, they overdid it there too, but they love their kendo sticks. WWE has this unhealthy obsession with kendo sticks. I mean, more than chairs and tables even. The fucking kendo sticks. And so we had a whole bunch of them right, in the opener. And then here in this match, I lost count of how many freaking kendo sticks were used. We need a 6-month moratorium in this company on the use of kendo sticks. They gotta cool it with all the kendo shit here in these matches. It's played out. So that really hit me like a ton of bricks in this match. So now the story coming out of this has to be, can Sasha Banks hold on to her championship, right? That, I mean, isn't that the natural story, I would think, coming out of this match? She has not had a lot of success in the past in her first title defense. She's had 5 Raw women's titles on the main roster. Okay, forget her title run in NXT. Sasha Banks has been a Raw women's champion 5 different times. The longest reign out of all 5 that she had was just over a month, 34 days. The shortest one was about a week. 34 days in 5 title reigns. That is the longest reign. Bayley just wrapped up a 380-day reign. Sasha couldn't get over 34. She couldn't get past 34 days. So the story is that she chokes. When it comes time to defend her title, she chokes. And that, to me, is the natural story. If they want to have the rematch with her and Bayley, maybe it's Survivor Series. But now the march can begin to a fresh match, a match that I would save for WrestleMania. Sasha Banks defending the SmackDown Women's Championship against Bianca Belair. I want that to be the WrestleMania match for the SmackDown Women's title. Bianca Belair is going to be a multi-time champion when all is said and done. But that is a fresh direction to go in. The timing is perfect. Bianca just got traded to SmackDown. They're doing these great videos for her, right? I mean, they're finally building her up the proper way. On Raw, she was just kind of forgotten about. You got plenty of months to build this woman up. It's only October. You build her up November, December, January. By the time you get to WrestleMania, she's ready. And that, I think, should be the match of WrestleMania for that championship. So, I mentioned earlier that Mustafa Ali had issued a challenge, right, to the Hurt Business. And the Hurt Business chose Slapjack as their opponent here on this show for a United States Championship match against Bobby Lashley. Now, if you thought that old Slapdick actually had a chance, if you thought Slapdick had a chance of beating Bobby Lashley and becoming the United States champion, you should put a bag over your head and join Retribution. He got some offense in. I will say, old Slapdick did get some offense in here in this match. Not much. The match went about 2.5 minutes. Lashley mostly dominated him, and he put him in the Hurt Lock, got him to tap out. Retribution, as soon as he tapped out, the match is over. Here comes Retribution. They come running into the ring, and they gang up on Lashley. Now, the Hurt Business did come out to assist Lashley. He didn't need him. Before the Hurt Business even got down to the ring, before MVP came out and Shelton Benjamin came out and Cedric came out, Bobby Lashley was making his own comeback. He was beating these guys off all on his own. He didn't need anybody else's help. He is just beating these guys off one by one. So it's like, as if you thought Retribution could not be made to look any more weak and pathetic than they were on Monday night. WWE says, hold my beer. We've got something else in mind here. And look, I'm not saying that they shouldn't have done that. In fact, I think that they did exactly what they should have done. Slapdick should not be beating Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley has been made to be this dominant force, right? He's got a championship. These guys should not be beating up Bobby Lashley. So I don't have any problem with it. I just thought that was hilarious, though. So down comes the Hurt Business. Even though, again, he didn't need them. But down comes the Hurt Business. And Mustafa Ali, he bails. He's all scared. This guy's supposed to be the leader of the faction. He's all scared. He's all concerned. So he bails out of the ring. And for the second time in less than a week. It hasn't even been a full week since Raw last Monday night when they got beaten and T-Bag tapped out. Here they are yet again on pay-per-view made to look like scrubs. And that's what they are. I don't see why anybody would have any reason to be upset about this. These guys have been a joke from day one. Day One, they have been a joke. And that's how they got treated here. Retribution is a lost cause. And it pains me to say that just because of Mustafa Ali. He just got put with this group. I mean, the forces seem to be working against this guy. We'll see how the story plays out. That's always the go-to excuse. Let the story play. Okay, I'm going to let the story play out. I'm just telling you, I'm calling it like I see it. Up to this point, Retribution's been around now. How many months? When did they first show up on TV? July? They're a fucking joke. And I only hope that Ali can come out of this with a decent spot on the roster. I think it would just be best to drop the whole thing. WWE has shown at times in the past that they can recognize when it's time to just cut bait and move on. They gave fake Kane. Remember when Luke Gallows debuted as fake Kane? We had Kane versus Kane at like Vengeance or whatever that pay-per-view was. That was a one-day thing. And the next night, Kane literally threw him out of the building on TV. He unmasked him, I think, and he threw him out of the building because they realized that this sucked and this just isn't working. And I can only hope that they do the same thing here. Just cut bait and move. Cut your losses and move on. They ended Raw Underground, and it's about time I think they do the same with Retribution. And let's come up with something different for these guys. I want to see these guys succeed. I don't want to see them lose their jobs. I don't want to see them just get demoted without any other plan in mind. But my God, I mean, you're not doing these guys any favors. You're not doing Mia Yim any favors. So just end it. Main event was Drew McIntyre against Randy Orton inside Hell in a Cell for the WWE Championship. Drew McIntyre made his entrance first, which I thought was kind of odd. Why would the champion be entering first? But then it very quickly became obvious why they decided to do it this way. We soon found out why. Randy Orton. Randy Orton was dressed like a ninja. He was dressed like a cameraman, all black. He was standing behind Drew before Drew could come into the cell. Drew kind of sensed that something was off. So Randy's plan of attack didn't exactly kind of work. That's not really the story here, though. I think the real story is that Randy Orton was wearing pants. How often do you see Randy Orton on TV wearing pants? It's weird. I didn't know that this guy was even capable of it. He probably should have kept them on, but the pants came off. He was in his gear. Drew went for a claymore early on. Orton hit him with a chair, and that is when he began to work over Drew, and it kind of dragged, and it dragged, and it dragged, driving the chair down into his previously fractured jaw. Orton proceeded to spend the next several minutes torturing McIntyre on the outside, and he was torturing him with the ring steps. You know, it gets tiring when, I talked about the kendo stick stuff in the women's match a few minutes ago, but even watching this, I mean, it gets tired when they're all using the same toys from the toy chest in every single match. The steps, the chairs, the kendo sticks. All right, we get it. We get it. I don't like having three Hell in a Cell matches on one show, and this is part of the reason why. You want to do one men's Hell in a Cell and one women's Hell in a Cell? I get that. That works. You have one men's Royal Rumble match. You have a men's Money in the Bank match. You have a women's Royal Rumble match. You have a women's Money in the Bank match. All of that makes sense. We didn't need to have three Hell in a Cell matches on this show. Honestly, when I look back at what they did tonight, Roman Reigns and Jey Uso did not need to be in Hell in a Cell. Roman Reigns and Jey Uso could have been an I Quit match without the use of the cell. Jimmy Uso ran down. He got involved again. The door happened to be open. What was the point of even having the cell? I don't think that had to be a Hell in a Cell match. I think you want to have two on the show at the most. I don't think you need three. Three is overkill. But they're all using the same objects and the same weapons, and it just gets very old. So back inside, Drew makes a comeback. Orton bailed out to the floor. Randy Orton had, earlier in the match, set a table up outside the ring. And they make their way outside, and Drew catches Orton and gives him a belly-to-belly suplex, overhead suplex, and Randy crashes through the table that he had set up earlier on. That is when we got fake piped in chants of "This is awesome." I don't know what WWE was doing on TV this week with the crowd noise, but it was very distracting. These stupid fake chants, like, I'm fine with having the noise track in the background so we have some noise. When I hear these fake "This is awesome" chants, a little while later we had fake piped in "Holy shit" chants. Come on. It's totally lame. We don't need that. I don't think we need the fake chants. You want to put the constant crowd noise in the background, fine. We could do without these dumb chants. Orton hits a draping DDT. McIntyre kicks out of one. Orton finds a pair of bolt cutters underneath the ring. He cuts the lock to the door, and he leaves the cell. Everyone's leaving the cell. They're coming into the cell in the opening match. They're coming out of the cell in the main event. What is the point? Just leave the door open. If they want to come out, let them out. And if they want to wrestle inside the cage, let them wrestle inside the cage. Why even bother locking them in? I guess he planted them there. I was going to say, why have bolt cutters in the cage? It's like if you arrest somebody and you put him in jail, well, we'll just leave the key in the cell. It's stupid. It's dumb. But I guess the story is that Orton planted them there just like he planted a little weapon on top of the cage, which I'll get to here in a second. But Randy, he's hurting. He's had enough. He starts to leave. Drew chases him out of the cell, knocks him down, and Orton throws him into the side of the cage face first, and then Orton looks up. You knew where this was headed. You knew they weren't going to have three Hell in a Cell matches on one show and not have a match where somebody eventually climbed up to the top of the cage. So Orton begins his ascent. He begins to climb. And let me tell you, that is a tall cage, okay? That cage, I don't know exactly how tall it is. I know the original Hell in a Cell, going back many, many years ago, the original Hell in a Cell was, I think, 16 feet is what the original cell was. This one's got to be every bit of, I don't know, 20 to 22 feet. It's tall. It's like unnecessarily tall. So he climbs up to the very top, and he's taunting Drew. He wants Drew to follow him on up. So, of course, Drew McIntyre obliges, and he goes and starts climbing. Drew was on Busted Open Radio, I think, last week, and he was talking about Hell in a Cell. Now, he had never been in a Hell in a Cell match before. The only time that he had ever done anything with Hell in a Cell, I think it was him and Ziggler when they were a tag team, had interfered. It might have been in that match, actually, with Roman and Strowman a couple of years ago. They had interfered, and I think maybe they ended up on top of the cage. And he mentioned the scariest part was not the climb up. It's not that slow climb up. He goes, it was trying to climb down, because you have to turn your back and start to go down. And he said he found that to be the scariest part of all. I don't know. I think both would scare the crap out of me. I'm afraid of heights anyway. Halfway up the cage, I'd probably just pass out and fall to the ground, fall to my death. But Orton had a plan. Orton invited him up on top of that cell for a reason. He stored a weapon up top. It was, we were told it was a pipe. I don't know. To me, it looked like a fucking lightsaber or a cattle prod or something. But I guess the go-to thing, if you have a cylindrical object and you don't know exactly what it is, you just call it a pipe. Right? If there's some kind of phallic object that the guy is grabbing onto, you call it a pipe. So that's what Orton was doing up top, I guess. He was laying pipe. So he took a swing at Drew. Drew dodges it, takes down Orton, but Orton hits him with it. I think he hit him in the knee. Orton begins to climb down. And I'm like, well, what was the point of going on top of the cell? That was the whole point? I don't know. It just seemed kind of weird to me. But now he's climbing down, and Drew is climbing down after him. So now they're on the side of the cell. They're on the side panel of the cell, on the side where the announcers are. I mean, you could see this coming from a mile away. We see this every year. Orton smacks McIntyre's hand, and Drew McIntyre loses his grip, and he comes crashing down through the announce desk. And I think the production, they missed the table spot. Now, they gave us a whole bunch of replays, which was great, but I think the first time they missed the actual table spot. And this is where they piped in the fake holy shit chants. So Drew now has blood coming from his mouth. He's a mess. He's got blood coming out of his mouth. Dr. Tom Phillips is talking about the fact that it looks as if he probably has internal injuries. Thank you for the medical report, Tom. I appreciate it. Drew slowly crawls back into the cell. Orton sets up for the RKO. Drew goes for the backslide, which is the same move he used to beat Orton at SummerSlam, so I like that little callback. Orton rolls through this time, and Drew connects with a Claymore kick. Can't follow up. He's bleeding. He's hurt. And I think Orton rolled out to the floor. So Drew has to now go outside. He's got to drag Orton back in. And he sets up for another Claymore. Orton, though, when he comes in, Orton ducks it. He just drops down to the mat. Drew goes flying. He misses the kick. And when he gets up, he turns around right into an RKO. One RKO is enough to win the match for Randy Orton. And Randy Orton becomes a 14-time world champion, tying Triple H for the second most number of world titles or WWE titles in history. Second only to John Cena, who has 16. So third time's a charm for Randy Orton. It only took three matches to do it. I mean, look, if you keep feeding me title shots, I'm eventually going to win too. So Randy Orton finally pulled it off. I thought the match was good. I didn't think it was great. It really did. I mean, I thought for a good part of the match, I thought it was very dull, honestly. It was really dragging for me a lot in that first half. And being that they ended with a clean win for Orton, and there was no cash-in attempt, no big surprise or anything like that, now that we can look back on the end of the show, there was no reason for this match to go on last other than the fact that they wanted that fall off the side of the cage, the big spot, to be the big spot of the night. Because Sasha and Bayley were not going up to the top of the cage. I mean, they would have died. So they weren't going to the top of the cage. And that's the only reason I think they wanted this match to go on last. And I just think that's completely stupid. I think that women's match, as long as that story has been built up for, and they actually did move the title off of Bayley, and I thought that was the best match on the show, that should have closed out the show. But the two matches that I was most looking forward to coming in were the two SmackDown title matches, the Universal Championship and the Women's Championship, with Sasha and Bayley, and both those matches delivered. And to me, that makes this a thumbs-up show. Now, I would not have changed the title in the main event. I would not have taken the title off of Drew McIntyre. I'm not going to say it was a mistake. It's just not something I would have done. I think Drew is having a strong reign. I talked about him on the podcast earlier today. I don't think he deserves a lot of the blame, as bad as Raw can be on most weeks. I don't agree at all using him as a scapegoat. I think he's done a very good job as the champion. I think eventually he'll get the belt back. Maybe at WrestleMania. Maybe they're going to do the slow chase for him now back to the championship. I hope he gets it back. I hope this wasn't, hey, you know, good pat on the shoulder, you know, good job, kid. You done good, but you had your time, now move along. Because I just think that would be very unfair. So I think he had a good run. But I look ahead now. Okay, Randy Orton is the champion. Now, there may be a rematch next month with Drew McIntyre. Drew might just get the belt back. You know, he might have the rematch with Randy Orton. I don't see why he wouldn't, because Orton got three matches. So why does Randy Orton get three matches and Drew McIntyre gets none? So obviously there's going to be a rematch. If Randy Orton were to hold on to the title, there's a few names that they can program him with now over the next few months. Keith Lee being the first name that comes to mind. Keith Lee has a pay-per-view pinfall win over Randy Orton at Payback. So he has proven that he can beat this guy. He's got a win over him. There you go. Once he's done with this, whatever's going on, this little mini feud with Braun Strowman, if the idea is that he'll beat Strowman, then the next logical challenger for the title would be Keith Lee. But now you've got Matt Riddle on Monday Night Raw. If you're looking for baby faces, you've got Matt Riddle, who's never wrestled Randy Orton before. Riddle has to be built up. I mean, Riddle does not deserve a championship match. He's done nothing to deserve one, but you could build him up. Jeff Hardy, we've already seen Randy Orton and Jeff Hardy a bunch of times, but you could build up Jeff. But then there's the obvious answer, which is Edge. And there was a rumor many months ago that WWE was planning to assuming that Edge comes back on schedule from his injury, have Edge come back, and when he challenges Randy Orton, presumably at WrestleMania, it would be for the championship. I don't think that match needs to be for the championship. I don't want to see that match contested for the championship. And so I hope that's not the plan. You could do Orton Edge 3. It does not have to be for a title. So I hope that's not the idea behind what they did tonight. But this was a thumbs up show. There were definitely some strong matches on the show tonight. And like I said, the match I was looking most forward to, the two of them, they came through. So what did you guys think? Let's take a look. This is the Insta poll on my Twitter at Solomonster. You can vote right now, thumbs up or thumbs down. Positive score, 72.7% thumbs up, 27.3% thumbs down. So everybody, the consensus seems to be that this was a very good show. I would agree. You know, on a 1 to 10 scale, I'd probably go 7-ish. Yeah, I'd probably go 7-ish. 6.5, 7-ish on the show. I think that's a fair score. All right, I'm out of here. Take care, guys. Thank you so much for the support. I'll see you again on Wednesday night, and I will see you next Sunday for episode 676 of the Solomonster Sounds Off. Until then, take care, guys.